my name is Beth Massey. I'm here with Spotty Bells, a software design engineer test. How you doing?
I'm good.
On Visual Studio, in which team?
On the Visual Basic Compiler team.
Visual Basic Compiler. Cool. So how you doing?
I'm good.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, how'd you get to Microsoft?
A lot of years of developing software. My first started programming in 1982. In England, and eventually got an opportunity to come work in the States in Philadelphia, so I worked there for 9 years, and eventually, after doing a couple of weeks at the Microsoft Technology Center in Waltham, in Massachusetts, I got an interview over in Redmond and got hired onto the Visual Basic Compiler team.
Sweet. So how long have you been on that team?
Coming up to 5 years now.
Nice. So what are you going to show us today?
One of the features that I've been working on in Visual Studio 2010 is the changes to the array initializers and collection initializers, which is a new feature in that we've introduced in there for this feature parity drive that we've got with the C# team.
Okay, so what are some scenarios why you would use collection initializers or array initializers?
There's a lot of boilerplate code that people write, as an example, when they're setting up lists with default values in, and they're just having to write a lot of boilerplate code, you know, add this to the list, add this to the list, add this to the list, and it's really not particularly clean syntax. And there were a lot of changes that had occurred within both AUKUS and the 2010 cycle. That really we wanted to try and make the coding experience quicker, less code in there so that it's easier to maintain. And
so it's basically like saves you time writing code.
Yep.
Okay, so shall we jump in, show us some examples?
Yeah, we can show some examples here. In the 2008 product cycle, there was a feature called Type Inference that got introduced.
Okay.
And that would work fine for most variable types and things like that. But that didn't actually work for arrays.
Okay.
The arrays would never be have type inferred. They would always be, if you didn't specify the type, they would always be of type object. So one of the features that's come along in the 2010 cycle is that now arrays are actually inferred.
Okay.
And one of the things that means to people, and some of these ones are quite small things, but you may notice them as you're going along, is that when we were doing arrays in 2008, we always had to specify those parens on the identifier to make sure that we knew it was an array type.
Okay.
What we have now is we don't, the first thing that's gone is that we, our type inference, means that we don't actually have to specify parens, like in AUKUS we used to actually have to do something like that to tell it was an array.
Okay, right.
And it wouldn't infer the type, it would just say, okay, that's an array of objects.
It adds integer, you'd have to specify that yourself.
But now, number one, we don't have to specify those parens. And the second good thing is that in this case here, we've got three integers that are in this type here.
And it infers
the integer.
Okay.
So that's a simple array, one dimension. If we want to take that to multi-dimensional arrays, in this case here, second one is a two-dimensional array.
Mm-hmm.
So again, no parens.
Okay, cool.
And it infers that quite good. And all these features are tied in with other features. So in the example, one of the main things that has been a bone of contention for a long while is the new line character where you put the underscore in for things to make things look nice and pretty.
Mm-hmm.
Well, again, that's one of the things that's gone here. So this is all works with implicit line continuation.
Cool.
So again, you can format it however you want in this case here.
That's cool. So there's no line terminator anymore in Visual Basic, is that what it is?
In a number of areas that has been removed.
Okay.
So you can specify them if you want to, you can mix and match them if you want to, but there's a most of the common scenarios like parameters on methods,
or link queries,
arrays, link queries,
right.
operators, after operators and things like that, you can just put an implicit line continuation in there and and it all works. So it saves having to put those underscore characters in, which sometimes freak a few people that aren't familiar with VB out. But
or even if you are using VB, as you start using more and more link, you find that you are writing like one statement is multi lines.
Yep.
So yeah.
And it was when you got those statements and they were rolling off the off the page.
Right.
Now you can actually set it so that it's like formatted, so each clause is on a separate line, but it's all nice and neat.
I like that. It's more like SQL.
Yeah, exactly. That's definitely a SQL one in there. So in these two examples, and this is a two-dimensional array, but if you wanted to specify like a three-dimensional array, and I can just add elements into all three here.
Okay.
So now that should be a three-dimensional array.
Okay.
That's in there. So that's all well and good for, you know, fixed dimension arrays and things like that. But if we want to do, as an example, an array of arrays.
Okay. Like
so
a jagged array.
Jagged array.
Yeah.
So in this case here, this is not going to work because the first one has one parameter, second one's two, second one's three. So in order to make jaggeds work, all we need to do is actually wrap them with normal parens.
Oh, I see.
So as each of them is wrapped in these normal parens, the actual squiggly braces indicate the arrays themselves, and the parens around says that's a distinct value. So when we look at this, that's an array of arrays. So that's now the correct inference on that one.
I see.
Okay.
So it's like double inferencing going on almost. Then,
yeah.
Right. Like inferring this plus the whole thing then too.
Yeah.
Okay. Got
so it. Everything in the squiggly braces is an array, but when you wrap that around, we can have things of different dimensions.
Okay.
So that now it knows, okay, that's one array, that's an array of more dimensions, that's an array of more dimensions.
Gotcha.
So then, and ultimately that gets wrapped in an array. So it's sort of a double escaping on there, but it enables us to do jagged arrays.
Okay.
On inference. So that's sort of one
the
side of things.
The
initializers. We've talked about inference a lot here. So in arrays, we actually do infer using a dominant type algorithm. So the types don't add, in the first examples, they were all integers. But here we've got a short, we've got a long, and an integer. And if we look at the type, it will actually infer to the dominant type, which in this case is a long. And it's a, you know, because they're all integer types, if we put a double in there, so now we've got integer long and double, the dominant type is double. And that's because of dominant type that was introduced in 2008.
Okay.
Now, sometimes in this example that I'm doing next, there is no dominant type. The class foo, there's no conversions or anything like that. So there is no dominant type, but we have no error being generated here. Because as a fallback, we will default back to objects. So that basically means that if you've got reasons for an array of various different types and things like that, it will just work.
Cool.
So
so you can't trick the compiler, basically.
I'm sure you can trick it, but we try to account for a lot of things here and try to make sure that most of the common scenarios work without problem. Now,
so this is still strongly typed. Want to make sure this is still strongly typed. Just like in Viz 2008, we had type inference on local variables that were just variables. Now we have them on arrays as well. Okay, and it's the same as if you would have said as integer and those other examples.
So it's saving you having to specify the types. It's saving you from having to put parens around things, and basically works with all the things like implicit line continuation stuff like that. So it's really short in there.
Okay.
You know, this can combine with other features like the object initializers. So in this class foo that I'm using, and I've got that down here, I've got an auto property.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably property. So you'll notice on there that it's now not generating that stub of the getting a set.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, again, simplifying the code so we're not generating a lot of code that you have to then link up a back-in field with the property. It's all automatically hooked up for people that are using properties, fields and things like that. So
in the
array initializer up here now, I'm just going to initialize the array with the user-defined type. And this is with the user defined type, this is with the object initializers.
Okay.
So I'm actually using the properties. It infers the array of the user defined type. So you can initialize them with values, not with values, and the array will just be initialized of that type.
Okay, cool. So we had object initializers before, but now we're using them in the array initializer too.
Yep.
Cool.
So a lot of these things, when we're testing them, we run a lot of scenarios where we're making sure that all the features work happily with all the other features, and we go back and look at previous features to make sure that they're all happy. So, you know, the goal here for QA is to make sure that everything works for legacy code as well as new code.
Right.
So that's good. So that's a lot of what's going on with the changes with the array initializers.
Okay.
Something else that just as a thought here, before, something that's new that's gone on here is we can use the array initializer standalone. So an example of this.
Right. Okay. Cool.
So in this case here, I actually haven't created a variable of the array type. I've just used it in place of.
Mm-hmm.
So that now the type is inferred to an array of integers in this case here, and that logic will work. And you can use the standalone syntax pretty well anywhere where you could have used a variable or type in there. So that's you can use it anywhere within your code.
That's
and
cool.
It's one of those things where it was taking it so that we allowed that standalone usage. So that's something else that's new. That before you'd have to type something like a new array of integers
with the parens,
with the parens and initialize the value. So it would be a lot more complex code, whereas all we're really saying there is, you know, we can infer the type from this.
It's like
this
an array
syntax.
Literal.
Yeah.
But
something to bear in mind is that syntax in this case here is inferred to an array type, but this construct here is not actually an array type. It gets inferred when it's used in context.
I see.
And that will become a little bit more evident when we look at the collection initializers.
Okay.
So the collection initializers is something that the C# team had implemented during 2008.
Mm-hmm.
But the VB didn't have that, so in order to, let's say, do a collection of integers in the past, you'd probably have to do something like this new list integer ci add 1, ci add 2, something like that.
Mm-hmm,
so
right.
A lot of boilerplate code just for adding values in there. So we wanted to simplify it and go with a similar design to the C# team. So this is now the syntax. It's using the from keyword.
Okay.
So in this case here, I'm now initializing the list of integers with these values. And you'll notice that this syntax here is very similar to the array.
Right.
What I was getting at before was this syntax does not mean initialize a list of integers from an array of integers. That's not what this is doing.
Okay.
This is just picking the values up from this. So each of the values is enumerated specifically as you go through. So there's no.
So it's calling add for you. That's what from means.
Pretty well.
Okay.
And then in a minute we'll get onto a couple of examples with how that's enabled and things like that. But it's important to note that that is not a conversion from an array of integers to a list of integers. We're not suddenly creating these conversions behind the scenes.
Not in this case, but because a list accepts an IEnumerable inside its constructor, you could pass it and that would do a conversion? So if you did a from, you just put parens around that literal.
Right? No, I don't think that's not going to work in that syntax. In that syntax, that won't work. But
because you can pass an IEnumerable to a list, right?
If you do a conversion between between an array of integers and list of integers, and then you could do an assignment, then that would work.
So you couldn't just put a parens around this and that would enforce?
No.
Really?
Yep.
Can we try it?
Sure.
What is it? What's the error? I want to know. What is V? Because VB is always so helpful. And so take the from out, though, right? Take the from out. Because you're now using the constructor, right?
That will work.
That's what I'm asking.
Yes.
So that is a conversion to an array, though.
Yes,
here,
but that's one that was always there. That's not all we're doing there is using a standalone array syntax, and that's where
that is an array, though. It's a conversion happening.
Yes,
so it's better to use from
from a collection initializer point of view. Yeah.
Okay, that's what I was wondering. So it's better to use the from and not this syntax.
Yeah, you can't use the from and an array syntax in that in that example.
Okay.
But
got it.
So just to within here I've got thing to verify that we actually are populating up the collection in here. So all we're doing is creating a string builder, mm-hmm. count the elements and iterate around showing the two string on them. So run that through. Five elements. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So we actually populated up the list. So, you know, and that was your constructor.
That was
right. So let's put that back to.
So same result will happen.
Same result.
But it'll be more efficient.
Yeah. So, and that's just, you know, that's.
Cool.
Okay, so
that's that's the best practice. Now,
yeah.
Is to use that.
If we're doing collection initializers, that's the way that
cool.
we should be doing things. So.
Awesome.
So, with the way that this works is that for you to use that from syntax, we need to provide two things to enable that.
Okay.
One is we need to support the IEnumerable pattern mm-hmm. for the class.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, the list of integer will support IEnumerable.
Okay.
And we need to have an add method, which obviously list has an add method. So they're the two things that we have. We actually don't have to support IEnumerable, only support the pattern. So that's get enumerate a method.
Okay.
It's something that sometimes is referred to as duck typing.
Okay.
You know, if it walks like a duck, quacks like a duck, then it probably is a duck. So.
okay.
So. There are types that don't do that. So here's an example of a stack.
Okay.
So you think, that's a bit of a pain, really, because not all of my types might have an add method. In this case here, stack will have a pop and a push and stuff like that.
Gotcha.
So one of the cool things about a feature that I worked on in 2008 was extension methods. So I can actually extend.
Cool.
The stack class that I'm using here. I'll just comment this back in. So now I'm actually extending stack of integer, creating an add method,
mm-hmm.
and that takes an integer in there and it's pushing that in there, which then you'll see
now works
in there. And that
so from looks for add whether or not it's on actually part of the class or whether it's an extension method
in
scope. That's cool.
Yep. So that basically enables you to add that add method to pretty well anything get out there.
Okay, so that's cool. So we can add an extension method as an add if it doesn't already have an add.
Yep.
You can do that. Cool.
So and you know for other types like lists and a lot of the intrinsic type or the built-in types from the collection classes, things like dictionaries and things like that. Obviously, dictionary is another common type that's used in there.
Right.
And again, what we do here is similar syntax to arrays when we're initializing it, but these are the parameters on the add method. So in the case of a dictionary, we're going to have a dictionary of integer and string, we'll have an add method that takes an integer and a string.
And that's what it's doing.
So this is where each of the elements is wrapped up in their own little sets of braces.
Okay. Right.
And the whole collection that's been initialized is in one set of braces.
Okay.
So that keeps the syntax consistent, and you know, if you have different overloads for adds, that's fine as well.
Okay.
So,
cool.
You know, it takes into that. So, sort of looking at how that works for user-defined classes. We've talked about that implementing IEnumable, and in this case here, I've got a collection of foo. We implement IEnumable foo, which then, if you're using the editor, will generate these stubs.
Okay.
And I added an add method in there. And you'll notice that I'm actually not coding anything in here. And really the purpose of what I'm showing here is that we actually don't use the methods, the getEnumerator methods at all in the collection initializer. All they are really there for is it gives us an indication that it is actually a collection class.
Okay.
So if I didn't have those, I've got no idea that it's a collection class, it's just got an add method on there, so we could do some really, or make some assumptions that wouldn't be true. So the actual getEnumerator methods, or the implementation of an IEnumerable class, is really just to give us a hint that it is a collection class.
Gotcha. So is that why you said duck typing in the beginning? So
yep.
If it has an add method, is that's the only...
It's the implementation of the methods in the getEnumerator, the IEnumerable methods, okay, and an add type are the two items that we need here. So
okay,
in this case here, my user defined class, sorry, I'm coming that one in, and that will work fine. Now if I comment the add method out, so the add method now is not there, that should result in an error,
mm-hmm,
and it's telling you it doesn't have an accessible add method.
Okay.
So, and likewise, if I put the add method in there and remove out the interface completely, it says that. But the duck typing is really that I can take the implement's interface out. Comment these back in. I'm gonna take these off. So, although they've got the methods that match what the interface would generate when you implement it, they're actually not hooking up to the.
Right.
So they're just there. They've got the right names. The right pattern, and at that point there, that's going to be valid. So that's really what the duck typing is all about. We don't actually have to implement the interface, we just have to have the right pattern for the interface.
Interesting.
And again,
so are we using, like, the compiler's like reflecting over the class and looking at these two things specifically?
It's looking specifically
for
this.
Enumerator.
Yep,
okay.
For that pattern in there.
Okay,
so,
cool.
You know, that's again, one of these little quirks in there, and there's a couple of other areas that I know that are in different legacy code that required this sort of functionality. So in order to bring that forward, so that then you could use collection initializers in there, rather than absolutely saying we have to implement that, that was why that was implemented that way. But it's
interesting.
It basically enables you to implement, you know, yeah.
You can use from on more types.
On more types than just the intrinsics that we ship with the framework. And, you know, if you think adding them to collection types, user defined ones. This add method, again, we could implement that as a as an extension method.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where you might have legacy code that didn't have the add method in there, but it was a collection type that you'd written, you know, before generics came around. People had written their own, you know, sort of type safe collections type stuff. So, mm-hmm. you know, this one in here, let's change that. So, on extension methods, the...
Two L's.
Okay. Cut and paste.
There you go. And then that's... Have the error now. Okay, so
it basically is enabling you to initialize collections simply, easily, with minimal code in there. Now, one of the... other final things that are, we look at the syntax that we're generating, and as an example, this new foo down here. If I wanted to initialize foo, I'd still have to, or I've got multiple foo items in here, and let's say if I create a constructor here. So, so at this point here, I can do the constructor here.
Uh-huh.
But if I wanted, or if I was with my add method,
mm-hmm.
I'm just changing some things around here, I'm still having to retype new foo each time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a bit of duplication there that, you know, I've got two items here. It shouldn't, ideally you think, well, the collection is a collection of foo.
Right.
I mean, I'm putting items in here. Why do I have to keep typing new foo in there? It's like you're having to type stuff over and over again. And again, extension methods can help out here, because you can create an extension method that it's of call foo, excess foo, where ultimately we want the add method to, or we want to extend.
So you would just create the new foo and put add right in there.
Yeah.
Right, and then you can just pass 1 and 2.
And then you can just pass 1 and 2 in there.
Right?
So.
Okay.
So
you'd say, like, you know, demo is new foo, and you know, of the variable, right?
Yep.
You just need to have the variable in there. Is that right?
Yep.
So, because you're using the constructor in this case, you want to use the add method instead.
Yeah. So, at that point there in the add, we go x dot...
Well, you could even change the variable to
this
say...
This is where cold foo dot new... cold foo... that's not the add method that I want in there.
It needs to have an add method in itself, right?
Yes.
So you have to have the add method there for the foo, call foo, but then you can use this to construct the foo class itself and assign
yes,
one.
Yes, it basically, instead of it on the call foo, I've got the add in here, and I should have...
Yeah, so put the add back, I know what you're saying, so you put the add back in here.
That point there, so.
Yeah, the Lenovo keyboard is a little weird. Yeah.
So that
point. So now, basically, you've done the construction down there.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So I've got. My cold foo has an add method in there, so now I don't actually have to provide that in there. So you can do that way if you want to avoid actually having to keep typing new whatever type in there.
Okay.
So that enables you to shorten things even more.
Okay, cool. So you have a lot of flexibility here, too, because you could put validation rules in this case in here and do all sorts of stuff, right? Like, so the consumer could, maybe you're creating framework classes or something like that, and the consumer of those classes could be notified that they couldn't add certain types of data.
That add method gives you ultimate flexibility as to what, you know, what logic you want to add in there. And one of the interesting things in terms of that add method, if you've got a number of types that are being initialized in the collection, so let's say new foo, and you provide one and two, and in your logic for add, you say if the type or the item that you're passing across is two, then I want to throw an error.
Right.
What you'll get is it's all or nothing on the collection is initialized. So if any of those adds throws in an exception, the collection will not be partially initialized. It will either be all of them succeeded and therefore the collection's initialized, or any of them have an error, the collection will not be initialized. So it's not like you then have to code lots of logic around there to handle
that. Makes sense.
You know, partial exceptions being thrown in the add methods and things like that. So
but you could choose not to add a certain element.
Yeah. As long as you're not throwing an exception out,
then that would be.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's just not initialized at all.
Yeah.
Okay.
So in the case of that add method, like I'd coded nothing into the add method, nothing into the get enumerate method, but I can use the syntax. So ultimately, those get enumerators are just a hint that we are a collection type, but the add method itself, if you don't do it, then really what it's doing is iterating through each of the elements within the braces,
mm-hmm.
calling the add method on each one,
mm-hmm.
with the parameters that you provided within the braces, and if they all succeed, great. If they don't, then we don't initialize anything. But it's really calling in there. It's really syntactic sugar on you going, add, and at least if you're doing add as separate lines, sure, you could get a partially initialized collection if the third one, as an example, do three items and the second one failed, you could get a partially initialized collection. But when you use collection initializers, it's all or nothing.
Okay. But the variable is initialized, it's just not populated? So would D be nothing, or would D just be an empty dictionary?
D would be... It would be a type of dictionary, but initialized to nothing.
Okay, so it would be null.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So it's just
but
not going to have
empty. It's literally null. So you should check for null if there's some sort of strange validation going on.
Yeah, but if your add method had thrown an exception, then it's going to get thrown back to the caller. So normally you've wrapped things up a little bit so that you're going to capture those exceptions and handle them.
Okay.
Accordingly, so.
But a list obviously is dumb, just adds whatever that type is right in, so you don't have any problems.
Yeah, so, cool. You know, for probably for this feature, most people are using the generic collection types for type safety and stuff like that. So it really just enables you to initialize them in one line of code rather than having multiple lines of code and work quite neatly on that.
Cool. Well, it also applies you can have some flexibility depending on what people are building. It's nice to have that added flexibility with the extension methods in there for sure. So this feature is already in C#, the collection initializers. Is the extension method support also in C#
thing? It is, although obviously the way that VB does extension methods is different, extension methods are supported the same in both languages.
Okay.
And then this is really that... a co-evolution strategy that's now in place, that we're trying to make sure that the language features that each of the languages does is supported in both where possible. So this one is sort of us playing a little bit of catch-up on the C# team, but we feel that it's a benefit to the VB developers out there.
Definitely. Well, I thank you very much for showing this off. I learned a lot more about collection initializers. I thought I knew about them, but you definitely opened my eyes to a couple of new things, so I appreciate that.
It's good. Use them.
Thanks, Spotty, very much.
Thanks very much.